Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hello and welcome to episode 401 of Geek Town Radio. I'm your host Dave, and this week I have with me... Bex, how are you doing?
Not too bad. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very, very well. You're an episode late for our 400th celebration, but you know, that's fine.
I'm fashionably late. Yeah, I was literally exactly at the time you were recording, I was standing on a stage at a gaming event, probably at that point commentating a bunch of kids playing Mario Kart, I think it was. but yeah, it was good fun. But I'm just fashionably late. That's what it is. I'm just so fashionable. It's a whole week.
Okay, I will take your word for it. So, yes, what have you been up to? It wasn't EGX, what was it? It was Play
it was
Expo.
Play Expo, yeah. Every event is this month. I got to the point where I've had to say I can't go to things, which makes me sad because I want to go to all the things. But yeah, Play Expo is a full weekend. It's 3 days, including the setup and stuff, but it's full days on the stage. I get about 15, 20 minutes between each segment. And I'm doing another event this coming weekend, and I was just like, I can't go to EGX as well. I'm going to have to tell people no. And I always thought it would be nice to be in demand, and now I have FOMO. It's a new situation for me, and yeah, it looked really cool though. I would have loved to have gone to EGX as well.
Yeah, I tend not to go down to EGX in London. I used to do it when it was in Birmingham. It was supposed to be coming back to Birmingham, and then the pandemic happened and they cancelled it and they've not brought it back yet, which is really frustrating. So I'm hoping it comes back up to Birmingham at some point, because that's nice and convenient for me. But I love EGX. It's a really, really good gaming event. I'm hoping they bring it back to Birmingham at some point and I will be able to go and do it locally then. That would be nice. So what else have you been up to?
I'm trying to think when the last time I spoke to you was. I'd already done the film stuff that
August.
I'd done.
It was about that. Middle of August, yeah.
We've done that. So I've just been doing a bunch of events. I did Gamescom and Play, and I've got a load more things coming up. So it's been a lot of going to very, very busy places, then being exhausted for a week. And I was also trapped as well when UK airspace closed. So I was trapped in Germany.
Yes, I was following that. That was very funny.
it was like I'd spent a lot of Gamescom, because Gamescom's hugely long days. You turn up at 7:30 in the morning, you leave late at night, you know, it closes at 8:00, and then if you're doing any other stuff later, you're going home even later than that. So they're super long days. It was lovely sunny weather for a lot of it. Didn't get to see any of Germany at all because I was working the whole time. And then I was like, oh, if only I had a few more days here, I could do some touristy things. Wouldn't that be lovely? And then the plane before mine left to come back to England. And then my plane was the first one that didn't. So then we were all stuck there. The team I was working with all stuck there for an extra like 3 or so days. But I immediately got a migraine.
Oh, no.
So I was spending days in a very dark hotel room, unable to even look at my phone screen, sort of going, and I still can't do the touristy things. No one's fault why, but a mixed event on that front. But Gamescom is huge. I've done it once before. This is my second one. And it's still daunting. It's 340,000 people. And an enormous event. You could fit multiples of any UK event you could think of in each halls, and then you times it by 10 for Gamescom.
Yeah.
Like, there was some really cool stuff there. Huge stands, Netflix stands, incredible. Like, I wanted to just spend a whole day doing photo opportunities, but obviously couldn't. I ran past some things and took some photos and sort of going like, ah, if I get time, I'll come back and take a huge Wednesday Addams stand you could take photos with.
Wow.
And the Witcher stand. Like, they were enormous, like the effort that the companies go to for the stands there. Mm-hmm. It's just incredible. It's like walking through a movie set going across that Witcher stand.
Wow. I will have to go and do that one time, because given that they have TV stuff in there as well, I think I could justify kind of maybe going over and doing it.
Yeah. Full size, like Squid Games playground.
Wow.
Bit. Like with the big statue of the doll from the traffic light game. Quite intimidating, that thing, not going to lie. Massive Stranger Things stand, as well as all of your big stands like your Microsoft and Nintendo and Sega and everyone you would expect. I did a little walk around of the indie game section. I think it was, I want to say 350 indie games in the indie game section, which is a subsection of a larger hall.
Wow.
I just go around taking photos of ones I want to look up later because you won't remember.
Yeah, no, I mean, I do that at smaller cons, so let alone bigger things like that. I go and take photos of stands of things that I've seen so I can make sure I can write about them afterwards.
Yeah, I'm just sort of running past, taking a photo of a screen, taking a photo of a logo and running away. And they're kind of like, what's going on here? And I'm like, I get half an hour break and it takes me 20 minutes to get back to the stand. So yeah, a huge place. It's really, really good opportunity to go and work there again. It's Gamescom. It's the largest gaming event in the known universe.
Yeah.
And that's probably not an exaggeration.
No.
So that was good fun. And I came back from that and had picked up COVID. So that gave me some time to catch up on my film and TV.
So what have you been watching on film and TV then?
I've been watching recently a Netflix series called Mask Girl. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't. Do tell.
It's a violent thriller about a woman who's drawn into very extreme and murderous-y circumstances because she becomes this anonymous internet celebrity that wears a mask.
Ah.
That's kind of her sort of alter ego, almost. No one's seen her face, and it kind of follows the things that happened to her. So that it's very much a thriller, but it has got some proper violent sort of murdery scenes in it as well, just so people know that there's definitely a blood trigger warning on that one. But it was quite a cool idea, and I was just kind of like, okay, that's intriguing. It's interesting to see how internet culture is now feeding into the kind of language of thrillers and horrors and things like that. So I've been watching that. I haven't quite finished it yet, but that's a kind of a roller coaster ride, I would describe it as. I also saw, eventually, it took me long enough, but I've seen the Barbie movie now.
Oh yes, what did you think? I saw that as well.
I'm not quite sure what I wanted, but it wasn't quite what I wanted. Does that make sense?
Yes, I think that's fair.
It was too much real world for me, which is my comment about loads of things like this. They had so many incredible references to some quite obscure Barbie lore.
Yeah.
You know, they have Earring Magic Ken. They have Growing Up Skipper. They have like so many legitimate discontinued Barbies and like information and things with the outfits, the costumes, the details, you know, were absolutely spot on. Like, they put so much effort into that. And then I felt like we spent too much. I know the story was go to the real world, see things, go back. But I felt like the pacing was a bit, and then we go here, and then we go here, and then we go here. There was a lot of traveling.
Yeah.
And they did their best to make those into fun montage scenes and things. But I did feel like there was a lot of, and then the characters go from here to here. And I was like, okay, it's a bit like Lord of the Rings here. They're just going from place to place. And I think I would have rather stayed in Barbie Land more.
Yeah, I think that's a fair
point. And done
that
slightly differently, because I was really enjoying like the aesthetic and the set design and the costume design in Barbie Land, whereas the real world, I live there already.
Yes.
So I almost would have preferred it if they'd done it as a slightly split narrative where, I don't know, she's there briefly or she's connected to them, or she finds out about the real world through TV and news reports Like, I feel like, yes, one character going from one place to another and walking through it and seeing the reality, I get why they made that choice, but I just wanted more of the Barbie Land side of things. Because I just felt like a lot of the tone and the jokes that they were making worked better when you had them in the sort of Technicolor setting.
Yeah, no, I can see that. I get what you're saying very much with that. I enjoyed it as well. And I mean, I did think it was kind of interesting that Mattel were quite prepared for them to be set up in the way that they were actually set up in that. Mm. And poke fun at their own company, because you kind of feel that if it was a Disney film, Disney wouldn't let them do that. You
know? If Disney discontinue a toy and take it off the shelves, like a massive recall, like they did with Earring Magic. If you don't know what Earring Magic Ken is, there's a lot of good YouTube videos on the history of this doll and why it was immediately recalled, yet simultaneously the best ever selling Ken doll ever.
Right. Yes.
I don't know if you know the history of this doll.
I don't know.
So they were doing a bit of a trying to revitalize the Ken doll. It wasn't selling as well as the joke in the movie is. Oh, he's just superfluous, right? And they decided to send out some of their executives to research the sort of things that young people were into. Mm-hmm. And they came back with young, hip, fashionable men wear string vests and one earring and a necklace with a ring around it because they'd accidentally gone to gay clubs. So Earring Magic Ken has a ring that's not designed for your finger, effectively, yes, on a necklace and yes, this purple string vest with cut-off wow, sleeves and an earring. And because, of course, Barbie is a gay icon, you know, lots of collectors in that community. Yeah. And Earring Magic Ken flew off the shelves. Like, bought up left, right, and center. But of course, then somebody at some point reported back to Mattel, you understand what this doll is actually depicting is adult club life for a particular demographic. And they sort of went, ha, huh, didn't spot that, and immediately recalled it.
Wow.
There's far more detailed videos on, if you want to check out sort of YouTube channels, you'll find the history of all of these kind of things. And so it was quite interesting to see dolls, including that one, like name dropped and shown in this movie.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was the thing as well. There were some of the dolls that popped up in that film that you looked at and went, did they really do? And they did.
Oh, yeah. 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 Growing up Skipper with the rotating arm that made her taller and changed her bust size. That was a real doll.
Yeah.
The pregnant, was it growing up? Was it Skipper or was it the other name?
I can't remember.
Might have been pregnant.
Yeah.
Skipper, and then the other one might have been the other girl's name. I forget all of them. Yeah. Although the whole thing with the pregnant one,
yeah,
seemed like a lot of stuff over nothing, really. She just had, you could take the stomach off and there was a little baby doll inside the stomach,
yeah,
that she could then hold. But one of the controversies about that doll was that it was sold as a singular doll.
Right.
So some particularly,
I see,
argumentative groups argued that this was glamorizing single parenthood yeah, for young women. So they actually, before they took it off the shelves, see, you didn't know I knew this much about Barbie, did you?
No, I'm really shocked.
Before they took it off the shelves, they tried to do a reissue where the backing cardboard of the box had a picture of her husband. And seeing a big company like Mattel sort of owning all of those things and understanding that they've moved with the times a lot and their products are very much a product of every era they've released in because they've been around for a long time.
Yeah.
I thought was really, really cool. As you said, like a lot of companies would not own that. They wouldn't be happy with stuff like that being shown and sort of gently poked fun of.
Yeah.
But it's part of the stuff that makes the history of Barbie and fashion dolls in general like really fascinating, is looking at how all these things have gone over the years, looking at things that were in quotation marks controversies, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was enjoying playing Spot the Reference for sure. So there was stuff I did really like about it, stuff I wasn't so sure. But anytime there's a film in a magical world, I think with the exception of something like Enchanted,
yes,
which is someone going from a magical world to the real world, which I love that film
because I love that film. Yeah.
They brought the magic with. Second one, no. First one, yes. but any other film with a magical world, I don't want you to come to the real world. I understand you have a budget.
Yes.
And I want it to be more expensive. But I think that's just a little bit of a bugbear of mine where I'm like, this doesn't, you know, 10 minutes max. And I'm sort of going, can we now go back to this really interesting world we've created?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that was one of the things for me. What other things have I been watching? I finished my rewatch of Death Note.
Yes.
There was a couple of bits of that plot I'd forgotten. Definitely Series 1 is better than Series 2 for that, which I'm sure I thought at the time, which is why I can remember almost the entirety of Series 1 line for line. And Series 2 was like, oh yeah, I'd forgotten about that entire character. But I think still worth the rewatch that.
Mm-hmm.
It is, for anyone that just saw the Netflix live action American one,
yes.
It's not the same thing.
Yes, I heard that.
William Dafoe being amazing aside, very, very different.
Right.
I enjoyed rewatching through that. I'm definitely still on a lot of this rewatching binge thing I'm kind of doing at the moment. I'm trying to think if there's any other new thing, because I'd already watched the first series of Silo last time we caught up.
Yes.
I'm now up to date on Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
So I've caught up to date on that one. Still enjoying that a lot. And first couple of episodes of Loki.
Yes. Yes. I assumed you'd watch that given your obsession and the restraining order of Tom Hiddleston. But
I don't appreciate the joke. Also, I'm far too lazy. but what are you making of Series 2? Because it's kind of a fun ride, but it feels all over the place a little bit.
Well, yeah, and that's kind of been MCU this phase all over. And thankfully, I think they're actually starting to realize that not having showrunners for shows, probably a bad idea.
Yeah, so much happened. I felt like I watched an entire series squished down into two episodes.
Yeah.
It was just so much going on. And like I enjoyed the ride, but it was, yeah. Whenever they slowed it down a bit and they actually just went and sort of spent time with a singular character, mm-hmm. Especially Ouroboros, who's an amazing character, like more of this character, please.
Yes.
Those kind of bits, really, really enjoyable. But then they'd be like, oh, we're here, they're there, oh, this person's here, or secretly this has been going on and here's a whole group of people doing what? And I was like, wait, what? Hang on a minute. Did I blink? And it just felt like it moved around and it jumped around so much. I mean, if you haven't watched the first series and multiple MCU movies, way more than with series one, you'd right, have yeah. no idea what was going on in this series, right?
No, you would have absolutely no idea.
It's not somewhere where anyone can join
no.
the series at all. So I'm intrigued to see where it goes moving forward. But I did watch that and think, well, they're not going to get any more fans from this. This is only something that you can enjoy if you've already watched the second one and know so many different things about all the characters. So, I mean, I'm still going to watch it all.
Yeah, well, of course. Yeah.
I mean, this is a given. I'm still going to watch it all. But yeah, I did kind of watch it thinking like, if I look away to pick up my cup to take a sip of my drink,
yeah.
I'm going to miss an entire plot thread.
Yeah, it does feel a bit like that. I am enjoying it, but it is very densely packed and, like, you know, things zipping all over the place. And yeah.
Did they have the episode runtime cut or something?
I don't know. I think it's just indicative of how they're trying to structure things at the moment. And I don't know what it is. I mean, the episodes are 40 to 50 minutes pretty much. And there are only six of them, I think, this time around. But I don't know. I'm hoping that, I mean, there's some news coming up later about one of the other upcoming Marvel shows, which I hope has been a bit of a sort of kick in the pants for them of like, they need to change how they're developing stuff, because it's been all over the place, this phase, and it didn't need to be. And I think they just need more control over everything right now, because at the moment, they're not really managing it particularly well. So hopefully this will get them back on track. But
I'm now one of those people that there's like, oh, there's a new Marvel thing coming out. And I'm like, okay, maybe I'll watch it at some point, you mm-hmm. know, when I, and it used to be like such a big thing where you'd be like, oh my goodness, and a new part of the MCU is coming out. I need this to be here now immediately. It's just so intertwined and so all over the place now that, like, I haven't watched Quantumania yet. I don't even know which other ones I haven't watched.
Yeah. Like, and that's the problem.
which is a shame, really, because I've been reading Marvel comics since I was a little kid, and yeah. I'm I was so engaged in it all. I really want to stay invested in the MCU. They just need to help me out here.
Yeah. I think that's it. I think everybody's kind of at that point that whilst it is a rebuilding phase and we've kind of all known that, I think even the first time around, you know, you knew what they were building towards. They were building towards bringing the Avengers together. And I think the problem with the amount of stuff that they've been shoveling out in this phase or the previous phase and sort of going into this phase has been there's not been a definitive target. And I think that has been a problem, you know, because initially it was sort of, okay, building the Avengers. And then it was the threat of Thanos and leading up to the Infinity War stuff. And you could see where the whole thing was kind of heading towards. And I think it's just been so all over the place with sort of the last phase and, you know, we're now into the, what, phase six are we in now, I think?
They need to just separate them off. There's a reason why the first Guardians movie and the last Guardians movie, I'm not so keen on the middle one, but the first and last one were good. And it was because they were more standalone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I think the first Ant-Man movie was quite fun because it was just a little story in itself. It wasn't quite on the grand scale, quite literally. They're very small on some of the other films. But I think they need to move to making them less interconnected. It's just, I mean, I know I've been saying this and I sound like a broken record, but it's not helpful when you're making this many movies.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they just need to focus on making good stories and then tying them together in a more natural way. Just feels very kind of thrown together at this point, and like it's almost sort of, well, it doesn't really matter, we can churn out whatever and people will still watch it. And I think people have got a bit sick of it now. So I'm hoping that they kind of managed to get everything back on track.
Yeah, I'm more excited for the animated things that come out.
Mm-hmm.
Because it used to be with DC, you were like occasionally some great films, but pretty consistently a lot of great animation.
Yeah.
And that was kind of how it was. And now Marvel's kind of going the same way where I'm like, the live action things come out and I'm like, maybe. And then it's like new Spider-Verse. And I'm like, yep.
Yeah.
Need to see that immediately. Can't wait. Would go to the cinema for that.
Yeah.
And again, it's because they're kind of more their own separate things. They've got a lot more freedom with them. Something about it being the need for it to be this big blockbuster movie is definitely not working anymore, which is a shame because I loved the phase one stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm kind of with you there. I am enjoying Loki, but it is indicative of the kind of chaos that seems to be going on creatively behind the scenes at Marvel at the moment. So hopefully.
Yeah, I think they had a lot of caffeine when they wrote the kind of pacing of some of the episodes we've had so far.
Yes.
It was very much everything going at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
To the point where, and I'm, you know, I know a lot of the MCU, I know a lot of the comics, I've watched the first series, I know this all very well, and still occasionally I'd be like, wait, what? How did we get here?
Yes. Yeah.
You know, I just obviously looked away or checked my phone for a second and then was lost.
Yeah, that's not great. I mean, you know, second season, it is lovely to have those characters back, and the introduction of Ki Huan in anything is...
So personable, right?
I adore that man. He's brilliant in everything. I mean, Everything Everywhere is an incredible film, and just the fact that he won for that and he's now popped up in a numerous different things. He's just brilliant. And I'm so happy to see him back acting and doing all this stuff. But he's just wonderful. He's so great in this. More of him, definitely.
Yeah, more of that. It's the fun character interactions that really drive series like that.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be constantly zipping through portals into different worlds and things.
Yeah.
Like, we need to be able to kind of like latch onto the characters and their relationships and character arcs, character growth. I think so. Yeah, I mean, we're only like at the start of the series, so we'll just see how that progresses. Really, I'm still going to watch it all, even if I just complain about it. I'm obviously still going to watch it all, and it will still be fun, even if it's not the best. But yeah. I think one of the other things I'm looking forward to is also on your list, which is the fact that we're going to get more Orphan Black.
Yes, they dropped a trailer for that, which is the Orphan Black Echoes. I'm assuming you saw the trailer for this.
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, okay.
I know I'm watching the series already.
Well, yes, that is true. Trailer's kind of interesting because the description doesn't give a huge amount away. All it says is it's set in the near future and takes a deep dive into the exploration of the scientific manipulation of human existence. Follows a group of women as they weave their ways into each other's lives and embark on a thrilling journey, unraveling the mysteries of identity and covering a wretched story of love and betrayal. You do in the trailer see Kirsten Ritter, who is the new lead for the series, who plays Lucy. You kind of see you getting almost birthed out of some sort of pod, but it's not clear whether this is going to involve clones and whether that's what she is or whether there's something else going
on. There was the whole underground scene of the kind of biohackery type people that sort of were connected to the events of the first series. So I'm assuming they're going more in that direction rather than retreading ground.
Yeah, because with the trailer, they announced a few new people, because one of them is Raya Kinnisted, I think her name is, who's popped up in things like Nashville and Dexter and Superman and Lois. She plays a brilliant, tough-as-nails neuroscientist who is deeply loyal to the people she is close to. James Ikaru Lau, who is from Barry and Blue Bloods and The Dropout, plays an extremely powerful self-made billionaire with a troubled rare mushroom farm designed to improve human biology. Reed Diamond pops up in there as well, who is former military. Reed Diamond, you'll know from things like Dollhouse and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and stuff. He's head of security for the Daros Foundation, which sounds like the sort of big bad possibly in this. Keely Hawes, who you do see in the trailer, seems to be the sort of scientist that's talking to Kirsten Ritter's Lucy character, who is almost a sort of mother figure by the looks of things in some way. So there's some interesting people involved in the casting of it. It's Anna Fishko, who wrote on Fear the Walking Dead, The Society and Pieces of Her. She's the creator, writer and showrunner of it. And John Fawcett, who was co-creator of the original series, is involved as exec producer. It looks really interesting. It has been picked up in the UK as well. It's coming to ITVX at some point in 2024. We don't know exactly when it's going to drop yet, but it does look really interesting. I think you're probably right. It's probably going to be, I suspect, maybe moving away from the clone things and more into the sort of general biohacking stuff.
Yeah, so it was really fascinating when they started to bring some of that in. Like, we just saw the beginnings of this whole underground kind of community, and like, I wanted to know more about them as we were watching the series. So I think that's a really, really good and smart jumping off point.
Yeah. So I think that's probably where they're going with it. But as I say, we don't know when that is going to land yet, but we do know that ITVX have it in the UK. It's AMC in the US, but they haven't announced an air date for it on either side of the Atlantic yet. So at some point next year, that's going to drop. One of the other new things that I picked up was Interview with the Vampire, which is now on iPlayer, the TV series. This is really interesting. Have you read the books for this?
I think I've read the first book a very long time ago. I haven't read it since.
Same position as me, basically.
I didn't really read much of the rest of them. I've read a graphic novel adaptation.
Right,
as well, but yeah, not in a very long time.
You're aware of the movie as well?
Yes.
Yeah. The TV series is somewhat different, but it makes some really interesting choices. It is done under the guidance of Anne Rice while she was still with us, and Christopher Rice as well. They are exec producers on it. So I think they've modernized it and changed it slightly. Like, the time setting is slightly different. So the interviewer is actually slightly different as well, because in the original, it's a sort of young interviewer that's interviewing Louie. I mean, if you don't know the story of Interview with the Vampire, I mean, the title sort of says a guy interviewing a vampire and going through the history, and it goes back in the book, you're sort of going back to the 1790 period. So it's that sort of period. With the TV show, what they've done is they've moved it into the early 1900s, still set in New Orleans, but they're leaning far more into Louis being a person of color, which he kind of actually is in the original book, because it does give him a Creole background in the book. Obviously, when the movie came out, he was played by Brad Pitt, so very much a white person in the movie. But that is actually sort of in keeping with the book. But because it's 1910, when they actually move it to, you've got New Orleans, which is kind of jazz, very divided, all that sort of stuff. It plays with the race a lot more. It also plays up the gay aspects of the relationship between Louis and Lestat, which is, I think, was always there in the books, but it was never quite as explicit as it is in the
Yeah, it was a very subtext downplayed thing, and it's sort of debated over the years as to whether or not people were reading into it or not, but I mean, yeah.
It was there.
It was definitely there if you wanted to see it. If you wanted to see it, you had to be slightly blinkered to miss that one, I think.
Yes, and they are very much upfront with that. And it makes Louis a much different, but I think rather more interesting character for the TV show, because you follow a character called Louis de Pointe de Lac, and he meets a vampire called Lestat and gets turned by him. And the sort of relationship between the two of them is the basis, basically, for that first book. With this, because of the fact that you've moved it into this slightly different time period, you're also dealing with a man who is gay, but obviously not out in that time period. And he is also Black and everything that comes with that in the sort of deep south of America, it alters the character quite a lot. Lestat is very similar to the book character, whereas Louis is quite a lot different. But I think it still works and makes for an interesting setup there.
Yeah, it was always about the dynamic between two characters and, you know, their kind of journey through. Like, I always thought that their journey through time was quite important as well. So I'm interested to see if they're setting this mostly just in one time period, or if they're giving it that sort of sense of they have moved through different times together as culture has changed around them, because that was always something I quite liked.
Yeah.
Although, again, I'm aware I'm asking people to do the most expensive option, which is yes, and also film this set in multiple time frames with costume, complete redesigns and changes and things like that. But yeah, I'm intrigued to see where that one goes. I haven't really looked into it much yet, but it is on my list of things I should watch.
Yeah, they do actually move it through time periods. Mm-hmm. I mean, not significant, necessarily huge jumps. Yeah. So, you know, they're not having to change entire sets. But, you know, the costume stuff, certainly, they move through sort of 1910s through to the Second World War. So you are moving over a fairly significant amount of time and change. Mm-hmm. On the other side of things, what they've done is Daniel Malloy, who is the interviewer in the book, is a much younger man. In this is a much older man. And this is actually set up as the second time that he's tried to interview Louis. And the first time sort of ending in disaster back in the sort of 1970s. And then this is him having a sort of second attempt at it. So that changes the dynamic quite interestingly as well, because you've got a much more experienced interviewer doing it who is older and crotchety and not prepared to put up with as much of Louis's kind of evasive BS. You know, so that dynamic changes as well. So there are a lot of changes from the novel, but I think it's made it far more interesting. Because I always said Louis in the book is the whiniest character throughout the entire thing. He's like literally the whiniest vampire you could ever meet. And I think this improves the character of Louis quite a lot. So I really enjoyed this first season. It is all up on iPlayer right now. There's 7 episodes in the first season and they're about 45 minutes long. So I would say go and watch it. Go and check it out. If you like the sort of vampire stuff, the relationship between Louis and Lestat is very central to it. And, you know, the other vampires that come slightly later on, they do introduce one or two. It's a really well put together series and very enjoyable, altered from the book, but still very, very enjoyable. I think they've done a great job with it, so I would go and check that out. The other thing which I have seen a couple of episodes of is Rick and Morty, which is back for season 7. It will actually be out by the time this goes up, but I got a couple of preview episodes for it. They've actually released who are doing the voices for Rick and Morty as well now. The series pretty much carries on as you would expect. If you like Rick and Morty, you're going to like season 7. It's very much in exactly the same sort of vein. The two of them going off on adventures, although the first episode is far more Rick focused and the second episode is slightly more Rick and Morty focused, rather than the two of them sort of going on adventures together as much, which is an interesting choice. But what they've done is, I mean, if you've not been following any of the background to this, Justin Roiland, who's co-creator of the series, was fired after problematic behavior, shall we say. Rather than go for what they did with Solar Opposites, which is they completely changed the character's voice. He voiced Corvo in Solar Opposites and they just hired Dan Stevens and basically said, okay, he's got a British accent now, deal with it. Yeah.
I mean, sometimes going for something completely different and then just, I mean, I guess trying to work it in as as a gag in some way that the voices change can be better. I mean, look at Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, what they did when they completely recast the mother. I can't remember why in any way, shape or form why they recast her, probably very different circumstances, but they just came back and sort of went, hey, did you do something to your hair? You look a bit different. And then just carried on.
Yeah, I mean, they released the clip online with Solar Opposites. It was basically Corvo gets shot in the neck with an arrow. And then when they pull the arrow out, he starts speaking with an English accent. And they're like, is he going to be like this all the time now? They're like, yeah, possibly. I don't know. We'll just roll with it. And that's kind of it. You know. So with Rick and Morty, they went with soundalikes. And they've been keeping the names of the two guys under wraps, I think because they wanted people to hear it before they revealed who they actually were. Mm-hmm. Ian Cardone is voicing Rick and Harry Belden is voicing Morty. Neither of those are particularly well known. They are brilliant mimics, though. I mean, Rick, you really, really cannot tell the difference at all. They've done a stunning job with that. Morty, I think if you're listening for it, you can probably tell that there is something slightly different, but it's very subtle. And I think if you weren't aware that they changed the voice actors, you would have no idea. Neither of them have got anything particularly huge on their CVs. You know, they've done a few comedy shorts and bits and pieces. One of them's had guest spots on Chicago Med, you know, but that's pretty much it. They were clearly hired because of their voice talent, and it is brilliant mimicry. They've done an incredible job. The scripts are as good as they ever were. So yeah, season 7, it'll be up on E4 from Tuesday night, and it'll be up on Channel 4 streaming as well, and going out an episode a week, but go and check that out as well. But they've done a really good job with it, I think. That's the stuff we've been watching this week. Let's move on to some TV and film news.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
So we kick off the TV and film news with the renewals, cancellations and pickups. There's a few cancellations. The After Party has been cancelled after 2 seasons by Apple TV. It's actually made by Sony Pictures Television. They are going to be shopping it out elsewhere. That is Chris Miller and Phil Lord's series, the people that are behind the Spider-Man animated stuff, actually, I think.
Ah, cool.
The show itself, I mean, I think got some fairly reasonable reviews, certainly for the first season. I haven't actually watched it myself. I think they jump through kind of different genres is what they're sort of doing with the sort of murder mystery thing. It sounded quite interesting. I haven't actually watched any of it myself. I kind of want to go and check it out, but we'll see. It's a rare cancellation for Apple because it is very, very rare that they just drop a show and decide that it's not coming back at all. Usually they round them off.
That's more of a Netflix move usually.
Yeah, it is. So, I mean, clearly it just wasn't working for them, which is a shame. But maybe they can chop it somewhere else. We'll see with that. BBC Three has cancelled the music talent competition Project Icon, which is apparently hosted and created by Jason Derulo after one season. I wasn't even aware that was a thing, but there you go. There are also some reports floating around about Brassic, which may end with its 6th season. It's the 5th season coming up, so we're talking about one season after the upcoming one anyway. Sky has said it's not cancelled, if you've been seeing reports about that. There's no decision being made as yet. However, by that point, there would be 6 seasons in, and the cast are getting quite popular. So I think it's sort of at the point where the cast are wanting to move on to other things. And it seems to be more a creative decision if it does end than it is Sky don't want it anymore, because it's massively popular. So if it does end at season 6, it will be ended properly. But there's certainly no confirmation either way. As I say, we've got the 5th season coming up. There'll be a 6th season after that, most likely. but officially there's no cancellation one way or the other for that. On the renewal side of things, one renewal based on a true story, which is the Kaylee Cuoco series, which still hasn't got an air date over here. I have seen the first season of, because I got some sent some previews for an interview, but that is great and really enjoyable. It's a couple that start a true crime podcast with another guy that turns up in their life, and I will sort of leave it at that because it rather spoils things if I give too much away.
Yeah, but that seems to be like a popular thing at the moment, because I was watching Only Murders in the Building.
Yes, yeah, Only Murders is fantastic. It is a comedy, this, but it's a far more sort of comedy thriller than straight up comedy, which sort of yeah. Murders is. So I really like what they did with Based on a True Story. It's a very different thing to Only Murders in the Building. It's not them making a podcast and investigating something. Mm. It's a different take on it. And I really rather enjoyed with what they did with that. I think it's a really interesting idea. It's a Peacock series in the US. It's not been picked up over here yet. I really hope that the fact that they've given it a second season inspires somebody to pick it up over here, because I think it's a really good show. And ITV has confirmed that My Mum, Your Dad, which I think is a dating show thing, has been renewed for a second season. That's on ITV1 and ITVX as well. That will be back. There has been a few updates on the strike, which I decided we're moving things around. We're going to put those in next. So there was a major stumbling block with the SAG-AFTRA strike, as the major studios have walked away from negotiations. The studios claim that the gap between the two parties is too great and conversations are no longer moving us in a productive direction. And they were claiming that SAG wanted a levy on subscribers on top of other areas. And the CEO of Netflix called it a bridge too far. SAG are saying that's complete BS, and we've made big, meaningful counters on our end, including completely transforming the revenue share proposal that they made, which would cost the companies less than 57 cents, which is about 47p per subscriber each year. Just tonight, the AMPTP intentionally misrepresented to the press the cost of the proposal, overstating the cost by 60%. They've done the same with AI, claiming that it would protect performer consent, but then continue to demand consent on the first day of employment for use of a performer's digital replica for an entire cinematic universe or any franchise project. So basically, you get scanned on day one and they can use you across the entire MCU, is what they're trying to do. And I mean, imagine if you're, I don't know, I mean, high profile example, Chris Evans, and you're Captain America, and they scan you on day one, and now they can pop you in absolutely every single MCU movie, not necessarily in a talking role, but you can have Captain America in the back of every MCU movie now, without paying you.
Yeah, likeness rights exist for a reason.
Yeah.
You have to have a say on that, as we briefly touched on last time. You need a say on where your image is used and what it's used to promote.
Yes, I've said before, you could find yourself being somebody who's maybe Jewish and getting scanned, and then find yourself in a crowd scene in a World War II movie playing a Nazi. You know, there are reasons why
that are beyond the levels you would agree to if it were you doing it yourself. I mean, we've already got with some of the AI scams, wasn't it Mr. Beast and a few other people?
Yeah.
They made entire videos using AI to make it appear like they were promoting these fake giveaways and things like that. And the idea that someone could legitimately do that, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's such a big and new issue.
Yeah, it is. And I can see it's just so wrong that they are trying to find ways to kind of get around this, because obviously people need scanning. If you're the star of a movie franchise, they're going to need scans of you because they need to be able to do FX work. But in terms of the rights of what you're allowed to do with that and how you're allowed to use it, every single performer should have rights over that. It's per movie, per series. And be getting paid for it. Just ridiculous to think otherwise. And in terms of the cost side of things, I mean, even if that figure of 47p per subscriber is true, how much should Netflix bump up their fees every year? And they're complaining about that, which would be if it went up by 50p every year and that went directly to the actors, I'd kind of be okay with that. That's not an unreasonable amount of money, particularly if I knew that it's actually going to support the people that make the content. Not that I'm saying that that is actually the correct amount, because they're saying that they're massively overestimating that anyway. But, you know, even if it was, I'd be like, well, you know, they're basically in a situation now where SAG are waiting for the studios to come back to the table, because the studios are the ones that have walked away, and SAG have said, we're quite happy to talk whenever you are. And you might remember that this is basically what they did with the writers. It didn't work then. It's not going to work now. It seems like it's the AMPTP throwing all their toys out the pram because they can't get what they want. And all it's doing is stalling the inevitable deal that they are going to have to make, because the actors are not going to back down, and nor should they, you know. So the situation we're in now is it's going to be about 4 to 6 weeks before those big network studio shows are going to need the actors back on set. And that's when the pressure will come from the networks to make sure that they have a deal in place. All this bullying and delay tactics from the AMPTP, hopefully the network pressure will put them back around the table, because it's the streaming services that are complaining more than anything else. And I think it was probably the networks that ended up pulling them back last time. And hopefully the networks will be able to pull them back this time, but we'll see where it goes. But at the moment, who knows? It just could be a few more weeks before they actually get back around the table again. But it's such a shame, because, I mean, at the end of the day, it is sort of delaying the inevitable, I think.
Yeah, it would just be good for things to get resolved in a way that is actually fair, so that we can get back to having all the series we want to see being made.
Yeah, and I mean, they manage it with the writers. I don't think what the actors are asking for is unreasonable either. And at the end of the day, the actors are not going to cave on this sort of stuff. You know, they're the ones that have made movements. The studios are just being belligerent, I think, at this point, and they're coming off looking bad, and it backfired when they tried this sort of stuff with the writers, and it's going to backfire again now.
This is all stuff that affects people who are kind of, I don't know the exact correct phrase, but the jobbing actors, people who are doing the smaller roles. This isn't about the top, biggest, most famous names. This is, you know, although they are obviously affected by the stuff we mentioned with likeness rights and AI and being used in things that you would not promote and things like that. But this also has a massive impact on all the background artists, all of the lesser known people, the up and coming people and future generations of people.
Yeah, they need to get it sorted, and that's what they're fighting for. And it is for a lot of those background actors and all that sort of stuff. So hopefully we'll see some movement sooner rather than later. But that's where we are right now. In terms of some of the other news that's been about, Freddie Flintoff took a $9 million compensation payment for the horrific crash that, of course, been referred to as life-changing injuries for him. And I mean, certainly he's been seen out in public, and that crash, I think, was December last year, and he's still got cuts on him from it. So sounds like it was probably a reasonable amount of compensation that he got from Top Gear. The only reason I bring this up is because you always see this from people online. Top Gear is made by BBC Studios. BBC Studios is an entirely commercial entity, does not involve the license fee. That $9 million is not from the license fee. It's from BBC Studios. They are two very, very separate things. In actual fact, BBC Studios go to support or reduce the license fee by investments in programs and cash dividends that are paid back to the BBC group annually as a profit. They receive no public funds. They return about $200 million to the BBC group annually. BBC Studios, as a commercial entity, actually saves money on the license fee. It doesn't take money from the license fee, and none of that $9 million is coming from the license fee. I just wanted to point that out, because you see that online all the time, and it really annoys me. So that's why I'm mentioning that. Moving on to a pickup, Star Trek Prodigy has been saved by Netflix. Season 1 is going to be repeated on Netflix next year, which previously ran on Paramount Plus and Nickelodeon. Season 2 is coming in 2024. Have you watched any of that one? I wouldn't be surprised.
I watched,
if you
like, the first, like, I think it was 5 episodes, and it was so Star Wars, I was confused.
So Star Wars.
Yeah, like the first so many episodes, I'm told it gets much more Star Trek as it goes on.
Yes,
but
it does.
The setup felt so Star Wars. I was like, hang on, is this like a spin-off from Rebels? A lot of the design, the style of it, the plot set up at the beginning. And then it sort of felt a little bit awkward, because I was like, okay, now it's Star Wars, but Janeway's in it. And I didn't really get beyond there, but I'm told that I should have stuck at it a bit more.
Yes, I can see what you're saying with that. And yeah, guess I would go and stick at it a little bit longer, because it does take a little bit to sort of find the Trekness in it, but it does find it. And it's really good, particularly if you're a Voyager fan. I mean, this is the sort of natural progression of Voyager, I think, or the next progression of Voyager, because there are a lot of Voyager people involved in this. Janeway particularly mentioned. It is worth sticking with. I really enjoyed the first season of this, and I was kind of gutted when they decided that this was going to be the one that they were going to chop from Paramount Plus to save money. I'm glad that somebody else has picked it up, because the second season was actually made. They just decided to sell it on to somebody else. So it is going to Netflix. Season 2 will be out next year, but it is worth going to look at. If you like Star Trek, it is in that sort of Rebels audience kind of area of a younger audience, but it has stuff in there for older members as well. So
a ragtag team of teenagers and coming of agey type stuff going on there from what I could see. Like, I didn't hate it. I just didn't quite know what it was trying to be. And then, by the time people had all told me, no, actually, like, it's worth sticking with, they said they were going to cancel it. So I kind of didn't go back.
Yeah. So now there is a second season definitely incoming. I would definitely go and check that out, because it is really quite good. Very enjoyable. There was a little interesting bit of news from Jerry Seinfeld about a possible Seinfeld reunion. He was doing a stand-up show in Boston over the weekend. He teased the possibility that something is happening, because the show came from Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld, and he said that there isn't anything happening yet, and just what you are thinking about, Larry and I have also been thinking about, so you'll see. So he's sort of teasing that there is something potentially happening with Seinfeld. Oddly, which I hadn't realized, they last worked together in a couple of episodes of Curb Your Enthusiasm, Larry David's other show, where, because it's kind of meta, that show, and it's Larry playing a version of himself, they had an arc in that where they tried to remake a final episode of Seinfeld, bringing all the cast back together. So it was sort of a show within a show, apparently, was what they did with that. So,
right. Yeah. Fourth wall be damned.
Yes. Exactly. So it looks like there may be something happening, but Julia Louis-Dreyfus has said she knows nothing about it. So if there is something going on, it hasn't made it as far as the rest of the cast by now. But apparently there is something potentially happening there. So if you're a fan of Seinfeld, there may be something coming back. BBC dropped the news that they are adding over 800 episodes of Doctor Who programming to iPlayer, along with a landmark online archive from November. So from the 1st of November, I think that was. All the episodes that they put up will be available with subtitles, audio description, and sign language for the first time, which is great. There are around 871 episodes of Doctor Who in total. There's around 700 classic episodes and 170 or so of the new Who episodes. Then you've got to take out 97 lost episodes that they had. And they're also including things like Torchwood and the McGann movie and Class and Doctor Who Confidential and other spin-offs and things within the 800 episodes. So we're not entirely sure whether it's all of them, some of them. I mean, it will be a lot because it's 800 episodes, but whether it's the entire every single episode of the classic run and episodes of New Who, we can't exactly say. But we'll see what's up there when they launch it on the 1st of November. They're also launching this online archive, which is going to be at bbc.co.uk/Doctor Who, which is everything from interviews with the cast, written documents, unheard audio, behind the scenes photos, all that sort of stuff as well. So this is obviously all in preparation for the upcoming anniversary specials, which are also coming out in November, although they haven't actually given us a date yet. Lots of Doctor Who stuff for you to go and play around with there.
Yeah, there's so, like, it's such a rich history of a show. There's so much that I think it's really cool to have it all in one place so that people can go back, especially people that have just watched New Who and want to go see where it all came from.
Yeah, absolutely. Apparently, this was part of the agreement of Russell T. Davies coming back. He's like, well, I'll come back, but I want this, this, and this. And one of the things that they agreed to was having as much of the archive and the original series as possible available for free on iPlayer. It was one of his insisting sort of things if he was going to come back and take over.
That's really nice.
Yeah, it was apparently that. So there's going to be lots of Doctor Who stuff to go and wander around on iPlayer from the 1st of November. there's another show possibly being revived as well, Suits, which I don't know whether you're aware, but in the US it's been on Netflix and has been like at the top of the Netflix streaming charts for ages. I think it's recently got toppled by something, but it has been doing ridiculously well on streaming.
Yeah, I was actually rewatching some of that for a bit, so it obviously...
Yeah. There you go.
Weirdly, I saw some clips from it on, I think it was on TikTok, and I was like, oh yeah, Suits, and I started doing a bit of a rewatch of it.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
So yeah, it's definitely trending.
It is. It's been trending out there. So there was talk about, oh, well, what about revival? And Aaron Kush, who's the creator of it, had sort of said, no, no, no. Now he kind of seems to have changed his mind. He sort of said he underestimated the success of it. Deals are apparently in negotiations, and assuming that all that goes through, the projects are likely to be fast-tracked for NBC Universal. Where it will actually land, who knows? But it wouldn't be a direct spin-off like the Pearson series was. It would be more like sort of NCIS LA to NCIS or CSI New York to CSI. So it's going to be probably in a new city with an entirely new cast, but taking the same sort of setup of a law office and interesting characters and that sort of thing. I doubt it will have exactly the same hook, but they're sort of seeing if they can work something that is within the same universe is the idea.
And then just do some occasional cameos and crossovers, I guess.
Yes. I mean, maybe they would bring one or two people across. I mean, you could potentially do that or just have them pop up in cameos or that sort of thing. So we'll see. But it is in the works. It's not very far along. They are negotiating things at the moment. That means it may never happen, but apparently they are talking about it.
Yeah. And if they're listening to this podcast, more with Lewis Lip, please.
Absolutely.
We need the new series to be lit up.
Yes.
I know they're all terrible people in that show, but Lewis became one of my favourite characters.
Yeah.
As it went on. I think Donna and Lewis are my two favourites.
Yes. He is a wonderful, wonderful character, that. So I would love to see that moving forward as well.
Yeah, he can be running a cat cafe around the corner they visit. I don't care. Like, we just need more of that character.
Yeah, absolutely. Last bit of news we have is Daredevil Born Again, which is the upcoming MCU integrated version of Daredevil. This is sort of what I alluded to earlier. They've basically fired all the writers and the directors, having seen the opening few episodes of it. It was ordered for 18 episodes. Less than half of that had been shot, and they showed it to Kevin Feige, and he basically went, "You're all fired." So I don't know what they've done.
That's a very harsh reaction. Like, just even the runners, even the wardrobe department, just like...
Writers and directors. The two head writers were Chris Ord and Matt Corman, who were previously worked on Covert Affairs. They've been let go, although they are staying on as exec producers. They've got rid of them. They've got rid of all the upcoming remainder episodic directors who they had lined up. They've all gone. They were apparently crafting a legal procedural that was nothing like the Netflix version, which was known for its sort of action and violence. And according to some of the reports, Charlie Cox didn't show up in costume until the fourth episode. So I don't know, but they looked at the episodes that were shot and were like, no, we're not doing this. So it's undergoing a complete creative overhaul, rethinking the original intention of the show. They are probably going to salvage some of the stuff that they have shot already. So it's not going to be completely reshot. But I mean, it sounds like it's going to go over a major rework. It was ordered for 2 seasons, over 18 episodes. When that actually finally comes out of development hell, who knows, and who they get in to take over it, we don't know either. But it's this sort of weird thing that Marvel has of they don't have showrunners for their shows. They have exec producers that sort of oversee it, but they aren't necessarily creatives. They'll have head writers, but they aren't showrunners.
If it's a cost-saving measure, it's failed because they'd already filmed half of this.
Yeah, this is what I sort of wonder is about the whole sort of weird creative direction that this has gone in the fact that they haven't really have people controlling the projects properly. And that's why it's all seemed a bit mishmashed for this last couple of phases of the MCU and all over the place.
Yeah, and it feels quite harsh to fire people for not having given them the correct direction, which sort of, I mean, I don't know if that's what's happened, but it sounds a little bit like what's happened there if the entire concept's wrong.
Yeah, because surely they must have known that this was going to be a sort of legal procedural thing. They must have understood that unless they didn't read anything until the episodes of film. I don't know. Somebody clearly took their eye off the ball on it. So, yeah, it seems to be going a major rework. No cast changes, but there are some major changes going on behind the scenes, and it looks like a lot of it is going to be reshot.
Probably a lot of people holding their breath at the moment as they're slightly worried about their jobs.
Yes. As I say, the writers and directors are the main ones that have been got rid of right now. We'll see what happens moving forward with it, but likely not to drop anytime soon if that's the case right now, I would think, with that. So we'll see where it goes, but I'm hoping that this is the kick in the backside that Marvel needs to actually start to maybe go back to a more traditional production system rather than trying this sort of wing and a prayer thing that they've been doing for the last few seasons of TV shows. We'll see where it flushes out, but that's the situation with Daredevil Born Again anyway. That's all the news we've got for this week. Just some highlights for next week on TV coming up next. So, highlights for next week. We have Rick and Morty Season 7, as I mentioned, coming 17th of October at 10 p.m. That'll be on E4 and also up on Channel 4 streaming as well, so you can go and catch that. Second and final season of The Wonder Years, that's coming on the 18th of October on Disney Plus. You can catch that. Dark Winds, which we've mentioned a few times, 18th of October on Alibi. That's coming at 10 p.m. You can go and catch that. That's two Navajo police officers are forced to challenge their own spiritual beliefs as they search for clues in a double murder case. It's got good reviews. Sounds like it's going to be one worth checking out. Bodies, which is a Netflix series coming on the 19th of October. Four detectives living four different eras find the body of the same murder victim in London's Whitechapel. It sounds like a really interesting concept for a TV show. It is based off a graphic novel, a Vertigo one, I think, called Bodies. Netflix, 19th of October. I think that's one going to be worth looking at. It's got Stephen Graham in it as well, which is never a bad thing. Big Mouth Season 7, that lands on Netflix as well. That's 20th of October. And Breeders is back for its fourth and final season. That's on Sky Comedy on the 20th of October at 9 p.m. as well. So, some interesting things this week. Rick and Morty, Dark Winds, Bodies particular, I think. For you, if they want to go and find you, where can they find you?
I'm on stage at various gaming and comic book events. If anyone wants to come up and say hi or get involved in some of the competitions and tournaments I help run on stages. And apart from that, I'm Trista Bytes, which is spelled B-Y-T-E-S, because I thought I was being funny, on most social networks and TikTok and Twitch and places like that. You can also see some of the interviews and things I've done over on the Geektown YouTube channel as well.
Yes, you can go and check that out over there and go and check her out on twitch.tv/TristaBytes. For other people involved in the show, you can find Matt over on entertainmenttalk.org for lots and lots more podcasts. We've just wrapped up the rewatch of Breaking Bad Season 3, so you can go and check that out there. That was really, really good fun to go through. There's also his Man U podcast and Gaming Talk and all that sort of stuff, so go and check out entertainmenttalk.org for that. And Daryl, you can find at hollywoodnorthnews.net for all those TV series you love which are shot in Canada. For us, you can go to the website at geektown.co.uk throughout the week and see all the latest air date information. If you want to get in touch with questions or comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. Leave a message on the website post. Find us at Geektown on X, Twitter, whatever we're calling it these days. Facebook at facebook.com/Geektown. YouTube at youtube.com/Geektown. Blue Sky at Geektown. Instagram at Geektown UK. TikTok at Geektown UK. And Threads at Geektown UK. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.